Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Rizzoli and Isles. Do you guys remember that cop show? It's like about like solving mysteries, but anyways, it's centered around two queer women. Well, excuse me, two straight women, and they queer baited the fuck out of us for like 5 or 6 seasons.
That was like queer bait before queer bait was known to be queer bait.
Yeah, before like it was like a fucking thing that we all got pissed off about it. Before it, because we were thirsty, it was literally the only thing we had was queer bait.
Why was there so much tension between them? Like,
because they fucking wrote it that way, dude. They probably wrote in the queer bait and were like, here, just go for it. We're gonna get the gay audience.
Somebody like me in the writer's room was just like, oh man, this is gonna be gay. But then everybody else is like, no.
All the producers were like, fuck you, no. And yeah. We're like, fuck you. We're going to make it the gayest straight thing you've ever seen. And it was.
God, everything is these days.
Yes, it is.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona?
Yo, I just watched... I don't know, I'm really fucking late, but I just watched the trailer to Rafiki.
Oh my god, dude. You have no fucking... Okay. So, Rafiki is a queer film from Kenya about two women. It's looks fairly decent. I've only seen trailers and read a couple reviews, but I know it's banned in their country.
Yeah, it got a lot of attention because it was banned in Kenya, and then, like... It kind of hit the media pretty fast, and then at a film festival, it ended up getting, like, a standing ovation.
It was at Cannes. It got a standing ovation at Cannes.
Yeah, and I think, like, people were pretty upset about it, and, I mean, of course they were.
You're right, yeah. No, I mean, it looks pretty cool, but I heard there's, like, a lot of tragedy at the end, like, a lot of queer pain, which I do want to focus on, because... people of color and queer pain kind of seem to go hand in hand in Hollywood, or at least in a filmmaking business. I don't know why that's like been a thing.
It's definitely been a thing because people want to generate empathy. I'm tired of it, obviously, especially here in America, because I'm like, we should be past that. Gay marriage is legalized, let's move on, let's do better. But I will say that's not an American film.
No,
you know, shit is different in Kenya. I can't really speak to it. Maybe they do need their round of...
I mean, it's illegal to be gay in their country.
Okay. Well, then there you go. Yeah. So I mean, I guess...
Maybe you get the death penalty for being queer in that country.
So definitely generating some empathy. I can see it being a priority.
I don't know. It kind of reminds me of Moonlight. Where, I love that movie. But what pissed me off about the audience perception of that movie was that, like... suddenly, like, white people were realizing that that queer black men were human, you know, and queer black masculine men could also be femme. You know, like, it was something very strange to me about the way the audience interpreted Moonlight, because what scenes stood out to them was the fact that a drug dealer was human, and a black man who's a drug dealer was also a good father. You know, like, he was a good father figure in some ways. And that's what really pissed me off, because a lot of people were like, oh, wow, he has the ability to be that. And I'm just sitting there like, duh, everyone's a fucking human. Like, just because you're a drug dealer doesn't mean you're a bad person.
And, okay, so these reviews weren't saying, like, it's refreshing to see that on screen, or they were saying, like, literally they're surprised to see it?
They were like, they weren't literally surprised, but a lot of the commentary came to me as like, wow, that scene where the drug dealer brings in the child into his family. And I was just like, what? Okay, look, out of the whole thing, the thing that didn't stand out to me was that a drug dealer was human. The thing that stood out to me is that a little kid was human. You know, a little kid was like going through this, like pain through this journey. Like, he had a fucked up family. Like, to me, the surprising part wasn't a drug dealer was so nice. You know, I was more like, wow, we're watching a black queer man go through it, which is rare. And it's toned, yeah. It's told with beauty.
I mean, that's definitely going to resonate with you as a queer person yourself.
Mm-hmm. As a queer person of color. But, like, everyone would not stop shutting up about that. And I was like, it was a good scene, but, like, wow, are you really seeing black people's humanity for the first time? Like, is this what it's taking? So that's what pissed me off.
Yeah, it just kind of... This whole, like... And also with other movies, not just queer POC movies, but POC movies in general, like... in America especially, like, I'm pretty tired of, like, the
someone
the pain, or just, like, the whatever, like, it's always like the us seeing us suffer. It's always generating empathy, and it's just like
they should already have empathy. They shouldn't have to fucking see a movie where for some people it's kind of triggering to watch that shit.
Yeah, we just need to like start celebrating. I mean, I definitely see in countries like Kenya and other places where they still need to work on that kind of stuff, especially illegal to be gay in an entire
death
country.
Death penalty for being gay? Yeah,
so,
that's real.
Yeah, they need some empathy.
Yeah. I mean, the United States is lacking a lot of that right now, too, but...
But there's, like, you know, it's not to that extent. Like, we won't legally get killed or anything like that.
I mean, people are getting killed, though. Trans women of color are dying.
Legally.
They're legally doing... They don't even, like, see them as women, you know? They'll put their male pronoun and they'll call them by their, you know, U.S. government name, not the name that they chose for themselves, you know? So, I don't know. I don't know what... I don't know what it's going to take for people to see other people's humanity, especially now, and regardless of what country or what state you belong to, people seem to really lack empathy, period. And especially for people who are different from them. So I think it's, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a use for all these films. Mm. We got to use the media to our advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are we talking about today?
Today we're going to talk about Dee Reese, a queer black director. She's made Pariah, which is like been compared to Moonlight, and she's also made Mudbound, which I believe you're gonna cover.
That's right.
And I don't know, I just think it's incredibly interesting to finally have a queer black director, but like no one gives a fuck.
Yeah, she, like, you bring her up pretty often, but I hadn't really seen any of her films until I started doing research for this episode. So I think, yeah, we should probably, I want to go into her a little bit, actually.
Okay, cool.
So I'm fucking pulling up the Wikipedia. I don't give a damn. So she, like, yeah, she also did Bessie with Queen Latifah, mm-hmm. which that's supposed to be queer. I kind of wish I had covered that.
Yes.
But yeah, maybe that's... another day. Mm-hmm. She looks like she got nominated for an Oscar for her screenplay. Like, she's like doing shit. You know what I mean? She's actually a really a badass and doesn't, like you said, doesn't get the recognition
no one gives a fuck.
She deserves.
Like, it's because she's not a dude, you know? Like,
well, there are women that are getting recognition lately. Well, more so in the TV sphere, like Ava and Shonda Rhimes and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, but Ava and Shonda Rhimes can't be, like, the only women making shit. And they're not, you know?
They're not the only ones.
Dee Reese is making some... But Dee Reese came up under Ava, yeah. Which is another fun thing
to know.
A lot of people came up under Ava. She's brought up a whole fucking, like, community. And Dee Reese is one of them, but...
She also worked under Spike Lee.
Yeah, she did. She PA'd for him.
Yeah, and she, like... She worked on, like, his films and all that shit. He was her professor.
Mm.
All right, sorry. He was her professor.
He was a professor. NYU?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
She herself was, like, queer. Like, that right there is, like, so important, right? Because, like, what other queer black women are directing
openly
shit?
Queer.
Other
openly
than, like,
queer.
Maybe Lena Waithe?
That's it.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So...
And she got fucking snubbed at the Oscars for Mudbound. Like, I don't... Like, it should have been nominated for, like, at least... like best adapted screenplay and maybe best film right alongside like all of these other stupid fucking movies that I didn't stand for. She got snubbed at the Oscars for Mudbound.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
But we can totally get into it. Do you want to give us a rundown on Pariah? Pariah was a really good movie. It reminded me of a lot of Mosquita y Mari, surprisingly.
Which one?
Mosquita y Mari.
Really?
It was very like... It didn't have, like, the biggest, not Mosquita y Mari, it reminded me of Lady Bird.
Yeah. Mm, fuck. But, like, the fucked up, painful version.
Yeah, but, like, a harder version of it, obviously. But let's get into it. Let's get into Pariah.
Okay, cool. So, Pariah came out in 2011. It was directed by Dee Reese. It's about Alike. She's a 17-year-old junior at her high school. She's, it's kind of like a coming-of-age story about a queer girl discovering her own sexual identity and her gender expression. Meanwhile, she's dealing with the, I don't know, like, super religious elements happening in her house. Like, not just that, like, it's kind of like a super regressive environment that she's growing in. Her mother is, like, super uptight. She's got, like, a stick-up her ass the entire fucking movie, and her dad is very disconnected to literally all of them. I think the only person that her father's connected to is Alike. And that's kind of a really beautiful relationship to see, as a queer woman getting along and being understood by her father, who is not queer. And so a lot of the movie is based around her family dynamic and who she is to other people and how she's understanding herself through that, through the way her family understands her, through the way her friends, her queer friends see her. So it's fucking amazing, actually, because there are some really hard relationships in this, like, movie. And I don't think a lot of those relationships get the respect they do by mainstream media. And this is, like, one of the first queer movies I saw after Mosquita and Mari. I think it came out, like, the same year as Mosquita and Mari, 2011. And I just heard about, you know, a queer black director, and I was like, wow, this is fucking rare. Like, I mean, we got, you know, Aurora making Mosquita and Mari, now this. This happened way before gay marriage was legalized. This is 2011. It was a completely different time to live in the United States. And I think for me, it's more like our time. You know, like, we were pretty young during 2011.
You were, like, in our college years?
In our college years. So
not,
like,
that young, but yeah, like, I see what you're saying.
No, yeah. It's, like, kind of mirrored in the way that we were experiencing being, you know, queer and American at the same time. But, you know, not so much what happens in this movie. It's pretty fucked up.
I can relate to what happens to it, but but that's just me.
I'm going to give you a hug later. I'm sorry. So Alike is doing this dance between her gender expression, because she's probably just come out to herself. So in the beginning of the film, you see her wearing, like, snapbacks, wearing baggy clothes. She changes every day at school, and she binds her breasts down to look less like a woman. A lot of, like, butch women do this as well, but that's what she starts off doing in this film. Because in the beginning of the film, you also see her best friend, and her best friend is a, you know, a hard butch. She's like a stud.
That's what she's confident one too.
Confident. She's like, you know, she's
comfortable.
She's very comfortable in her identity. She's been queer for a while. She's a little bit older, and she seems to be kind of like shepherding Alike into herself. You know, this is, she's expressing one way to express your gender. You know, she's like, hey, you can be a stud if you want, you know? But I feel like that happens at every person's, like, early ages of being queer. Like, you test out, like, what kind of queer you're going to be.
Yeah, my snapbacks have taken a back burner, personally.
I still have them. I just don't wear them, like,
yeah, they're just there.
Too much. Every now and then I'll pull it out just for, like, old time's sake. Okay, yeah, ding, ding, ding. And I like that she's openly doing this, because I feel like a lot of queer people, and as queer people of color, aren't given that, like, platform. Like, you never really see a black girl struggling between being femme and butch. And I thought this was really cool, because she was kind of, like, finding herself, finding her gender expression. I think that's super cool, because we all go through that shit. And to normalize it and to see it as normal is, like, it made my heart really fucking happy, because I feel we all do that. That's at the beginning of the film. As the film progresses, you see her becoming less and less butch and more herself. And that's what the movie's all about, is her figuring out who she is. She ends up dating is a strong word. She meets a young girl from her church.
Did you recognize where she's from?
Yeah, she was in Degrassi.
Did you recognize where else she's from? She was in Degrassi?
Yeah. So Alika's love interest was also in Degrassi. She was, like, the pregnant girl, and her boyfriend is the one that, like, got shot up in a school shooting.
She was also in South of Nowhere.
Yeah, and South of Nowhere. No, South of Nowhere is where she's from. And then her boyfriend got killed.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So yeah, okay. I don't know if she's from...
I confuse South of Nowhere and Degrassi because they're both super cheesy.
Yeah. They're just very, like, they're very early 2000s production value, yeah, I will say.
Early 2000s cable production value. Right. So
which back then I was like, this is the best show.
South of Nowhere.
I tried to rewatch it when we first started this podcast, and I was like, this is horrendous.
It was terrible acting, but when you're, like, 16, 17, and you got nothing else, it's amazing.
It was really good. she was at Lexicon last year, and I vividly remember, like, they had the South of Nowhere panel, and she was in the audience, and, like, they were talking about her, and then they had her go up on stage, and she was so excited about it. It was the most adorable
moment. She's so sweet, and, like, she's a real queer ally in real life, but in this movie, she played, like, a closeted church girl.
Yeah, like next level closeted too, like closeted to herself.
Yeah, like a douchebag.
No, I mean, this is not her fault. Like, I've always said, like, it's harder, it can be harder to be bi than to be, like, gay, because you are stuck with that decision, you know what I mean? Like, you have to make a decision of, like...
I guess, yeah, I guess...
That's
yeah.
harder.
Like, I wouldn't understand.
Like,
yes,
we are basically for... Like, we're not... We can't just be straight, you know what I mean? We can't just pretend
no
to be straight.
No one's just gay, though.
Like, right, no, of course, but, like... It's just more difficult when it's more defined as bi, you know what I mean?
And especially when you're in high school, that's so hard.
Yeah, so for her, she was very, like, testing these waters, and she definitely was not ready to step in the pool, you know what I mean?
I mean, but she stepped in the pool, okay? She just got out when she had a little swim in a pool, and Alika's boo thing got the fuck out of that pool and was like, I am terrified of water.
But that's really real, too. Like, I've known several girls like that. That are just, they just can't do it, you know what I mean?
Oh, I'm
like,
sorry. That sucks. I have not met girls like that. I've met girls like that, but that's not happened to me.
Not
I was
any
like,
that I, luckily, not any that I got, like, emotionally invested with, like she does in this movie, but, like, I know girls like that. Or the next day, they're like, oh, no, I'm straight. And I'm just like, no, you're not. But it's fine. Do what you will.
Whoa. No, that's not happened to me. Because I can see those girls from a mile, and I'm like, not you. I'm like, uh-uh, we ain't doing this, boo. Like,
oh my God.
Find someone else. But anyways, like, there's another girl, and you see people struggling with their sexual identity. This other girl is going through figuring out what kind of queer she is, and that's a hard thing to do when you're fucking 16, you know? And then on top of, like, religious pressure, which obviously, if the girl goes to the same church as Alike, they're going through the same kind of religious structure there. So it was painful to watch, because that really fucking hurt. So spoiler alert.
No
spoiler.
Well,
okay.
I don't know. Well, what are you gonna spoil?
I'm just gonna say, like, she hurts Alike.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we've kind of implied that already.
Okay. Well, she hurts Alike, and she's just as confused as Alike, probably in a different kind of way. So Alike is left with that heartbreak, and that sucks. Like, you know, to be what, 17. And to be dumped so quickly, just kind of used and abused the first time, that's so trash. Like, Alika is, like, experiencing so many trash things in this fucking movie. But it's so real. You know, like, some people's experiences are this painful back to back to back to back.
Yeah, definitely. All that shit does add up, especially, like, when you're a teen, like you said, and then your emotions are all fucking high to begin with, hormones and shit. Yeah, that's how it is. It's just, it's sad.
No, and then another thing I found interesting is whenever she was going, when she was out in public with her father was a cop, and her father was hanging out with a bunch of dudes one day, and then one of them starts saying really homophobic things, and then he directs those homophobic slurs to his daughter, and then that's when you see that, like, I kind of had like a weird moment of, is he an ally, or is he just mad?
I think he was mad at first.
But then he quickly became an ally, I believe.
Well, yeah, because he didn't know that about his daughter. He didn't believe that about his daughter. And so, yeah, you quickly turn around. When it comes to somebody that's close to you, like, you change your perspective real quick.
Well, he did.
Yeah,
he's
did.
A good, he's a
well,
good
some,
person.
Some people do.
Some people change their perspective.
I think a lot of parents do. Like, even if it's not a quick turnaround, like, oh, all of a sudden I love gay people. It's nothing like that, but your perspective at the very least changes.
Oh, he's
like,
changed real quick.
Yeah,
like, he, as much as he was cheating on his wife, that's not, like, a big thing. It's pretty obvious from the get-go he's very disconnected from her, like, from the jump. And you see Alika's mom, you kind of get her a little bit about how stiff she is and how controlling she is and how she's pushing away everyone in her family, including her husband. And because of how unwilling to grow and change she is, even the youngest daughter, who is very straight, is way more accepting than her mother.
Yeah, she's such a, like, typical little annoying little sister that's, like, such a jerk. But, like, even
totally
she is
loves,
loyal.
Loyal and loves Alike. Like, yeah. There's a moment where Alike is trying to figure out her gender expression, and her little sister walks in, and she's like, oh, shit! But at the same time, she's like, but whatever, just give me my thing that I wanted. Come on,
yeah,
go
she's
away.
She's like, eh, whatever, I don't
she's
care.
She's like, eh, I don't care. And I really appreciate that. They're showing, like, okay, you know, some families are fucked up, but it's not the entire, you know, not everyone is, like, casting her out as this outsider. Like, no. There's probably just one person. It's her mom, and that's extremely painful. There is a turning point in the movie where Alike is forced to choose between making other people and finding herself, finding her own joy. And I think that was a really, really powerful moment for any queer person to see, because not all of us can make that choice immediately. And she did. Mm-hmm. She completely changed her whole life based off that one thing. And I know a lot of people that will continue to maybe continue to make other people happy just because they feel they have to. And Elike in that moment decided, fuck that, I'm going to make myself happy. And it was a really powerful statement. Like, I think a lot of queer people it's such a relatable movie. And every moment you're seeing, you're reflecting on if you're like us, you've already come out, or if you're in the closet, you see it and you see, yes, it's going to be extremely difficult, but at the same time, you're going to be at peace with yourself. And that's what I think the film is saying throughout it, is you're going to figure out who you are, and it's going to be painful, but at the end, it's going to be powerful for you, even if it doesn't look that way, you know? Because at the end, she's on a bus alone. She got into like an early college program, and she's going to go do her fucking damn thing. And I think that was another beautiful thing that maybe people of color and like people just struggling that they can relate to, is getting out the hood, also finding yourself and finding a lot of power in who you are, regardless of your family and of anyone else, finding your own fucking power and love for yourself. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and that point that you just made is like especially personified in like she's that decision, and then the girl that didn't decide to stay with her was the other decision, you know what I mean? And I can see how easy it is to break apart, because you see already a rift between Elike and her family, but the other girl is very close with her family, and like she goes to church and all the time and all that stuff. So it was probably like a lot more difficult for her, like, to even consider that choice. Like, it probably wasn't even a consideration. She was just like, I can't, like,
you know. Whereas Elike was like pushed.
Whereas Elike, like, she had, like, she could make that decision. She was put in a position to be able to make it.
Yeah. And, I mean, this movie is fucking beautiful to me. And, like, she literally, like, it's a lot of queer pain. But this was at a different time in American history. And this was a different kind of family being showed. And Maitha compared it to Lady Bird. I want to hear more about that.
Well, it was just the plot line wise, because she's like wanting to go away, and her dad doesn't want her to. The mom isn't speaking to her at that moment because of certain ways certain decisions that she's making, or not even a decision, but who she is in this case. So obviously it's a lot worse than Lady Bird. Yeah. It's like a real, like, you know, Lady Bird pales in comparison, no pun intended. So that's where it kind of reminded me of that, because it's still very coming of age. It's still a person figuring themselves out, but obviously it's just a lot harder when you're POC, when you're queer.
Yeah, and a fun thing that Lena Waithe said is that they asked her if queer black lesbians had, like, a Moonlight, and she's like, yeah, Pariah came out fucking years ago. Yeah. Y'all didn't fucking talk about it. It's on Netflix. She's like, get learned, bitch. Like, and it's a beautiful film, and I recommend everyone to watch it, not if you're maybe going through something really difficult, maybe not. Maybe allow yourself some space and time to come back to it when you're probably emotionally ready.
It's not grueling, but it's pretty tough.
Yeah, it's a tough film. Like, after it, I needed a hug. It was definitely, it was hard to watch for me.
For some people, for example, I didn't struggle with it, even though I related more to the exact, like, thing that she was going through. For me, it was nice, because at the end
it was beautiful at the end.
Yeah, at the end she's amazing. Like, she's gonna thrive, or there's hope, and I like that, because that's,
and Dee Reese said that was probably her most personal film, and she'd based a lot of it off her own life. Right. There's a lot of comparisons that are very similar to her life, and the way that she came to it, because she came out in college, not in high school, but when she did, she was shunned by her family, and it took them a very long time to get to her, because they were like super Christian. Yeah. So I guess it's an interesting movie, and I'm gonna give it probably 5 panduses, because I love it as much as I love Mosquito and Mari, and it means the same thing to me as Mosquito and Mari. And
Mosquito and Mari.
It's and Mari?
It's, you know what I'm saying? You're saying Mosquita and Mari.
Oh, Mosquita y Mari. My bad. I was like, I'm talking all Spanglish here. I'm talking like Vita. and so, yeah, I gave it 5 panduses. It's, honestly, if you're really going through something deep, it's not, for me, it's not easy to watch. I don't watch it too many times. Maybe once, twice a year, because I just can't. It's hard for me. And it's a hard thing to watch. I don't know. But it's five panduses is perfect for me, but it hurts.
I would say half a cafecito when I watched it. Like, mm-hmm. like I said, it wasn't hard for me, but after you go through it and then you see it, it's like going through it was harder. So it was whatever. And I think it was really, really good. As far as plot goes, like, it doesn't have a super high climax or anything like that, but it, so yeah.
It's a very internal thing right. for me when I watch it. It's very internal. It's not, my experience wasn't too different from hers either, actually. It wasn't, no, it... My high school experience was much like hers, and not exactly the same, but it just felt very personal to me to watch because there are things in there that I can completely, like a lot of, most of her story I related to. So it just hurt. Memories. Bad memories.
But yeah, half a cafecito for me because, I just think it's not too hard to watch, but it's just like, for me.
It's necessary to see.
Yeah, I think it's a very important
thing. And I think people should see it, but you know, it's just fuck. I need a hug. But yeah, so, and what are you going to talk about today?
I'm going to talk about another film. This one, Dee Reese directed it. I don't think she wrote it. No.
It's adapted. Someone else wrote it. It's a book.
She co-wrote it, actually. That's what they're, yeah. So she co-wrote it. It was based on a book. She did direct it. This movie's a lot more recent. It came out in 2017. Mm-hmm. But it's based on a time period from a long fucking time ago. It's kind of a interesting movie. It's one of those movies where it begins with the end. It begins with like, or almost the end of the story. There's like these two white guys and they're burying their father and they ask for the assistance of this man, Hap. He's played by Rob Morgan, and him and his family, like they're on their like, what do you call it, like carriage thing or whatever?
Yeah, they're a horse carriage.
And they're passing by, and they have very somber looks on their faces, like they're just like tired of life, and they look at him like pissed. Like they look at him like, "Are you fucking kidding me right now, asking me for help?" Mm-hmm. And we don't know why, but they're just looking at him like they're fucking crazy. But yeah, then we go, I guess, back in time. And we come to know these two separate families, which is the family of those two white men and Hap's family, which is his wife, his three kids. And one of those three kids they have to part ways with. It's Ronsell. Mm-hmm. And he's sent off to basically fight in the front lines of the war at the time. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, okay, cool.
A couple times. It's World War II, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Hitler and shit. Mm-hmm. The other family is the McAllens. Laura, this white woman, she marries Henry, even though she's really more impressed by his brother, Jamie. And they have two kids. Jamie, like, is also sent off to fight in the war. He's the younger brother, if I'm not mistaken. And he, mm-hmm. but of course, instead of being on the front lines, he's like, they kind of talk about in the movie, like, he's placed up above not only in society but in the war. He flies one of the planes and bombs people and shit, and that's considered more, I don't know,
prestigious. It's not as dangerous. He's not on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So while I'm at war, Ronsell like is in Germany and he takes up with a German girl and they're like in love and shit. And you see him kind of, like, enjoying his life, even though he's off fighting at a war. Like, you see him kind of, like...
It's, like, less racist in Germany, oddly enough, during
For him, World at the War time. II, which right.
is one of the most racist places in the world.
At the time.
No, like, still.
Oh. Is still, it?
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty bad if you're black in Germany.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
There's been some, like, YouTubers that have gone over there and been like, what the fuck? This
oh, my God.
Trash. Yeah.
That's odd. I have to look into that. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. No, there's even talks of people that were like black women that were like their great grandfathers were like Nazis.
Shit.
And they were talking about their understanding their like their father being a black dude or their mom being a black woman in Germany in like the past, and even now it's still not that much better.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
What was I saying? Okay, yeah, and then, but yeah, he's basically, this is one of the only times that you really see Ronsell get to enjoy himself and feel and really, like, human and equal, which is crazy, because he's also being treated like shit by the other soldiers who, you know, treat him like less than, even though he's, like, literally fighting for their country's lives, and, Yeah, and then Jamie also like enjoys himself because, you know,
he's a white guy. He has fun all the time.
When would he not? Anyways, meanwhile, while they're over there fighting in the war, Henry moves his family out to Mississippi. He adds his relentlessly racist father to the mix.
Oh, God. That fucking old man.
Yeah, so he puts a deposit down for this house, but he gets screwed over for that house. And, like, yeah, back in the day, you didn't exactly have, like, a lot of paperwork. Legal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was kind of difficult.
It was the truth.
We shook on it, yeah. So he has to settle his family into, like, the small little crappy house on the farmland that he also purchased. Which is not too far from where Hap's family lives and this other family that he considers less than because they're very poor. But privilege was on, like, fucking crack back then, right? Like, it's bad now, but it was bad then. So he, like, steps in this land out of nowhere and he forces Hap to come and, like, help him. And he later hires Hap's wife to be a housekeeper because his wife is, like, struggling too hard being a housekeeper. And,
taking care of the kids.
Taking the kids and cleaning and cooking was, like, a bitch back then.
And it's played by Mary J. Blige. Shout out Mary J. Blige. She got an Oscar nomination.
Yeah, she's a baddie. So both of the families, they start to struggle when it comes to, like, their farmland and stuff when Hap's mule dies. And Henry's an asshole, so he, like, makes him... fucking charges him to use his one of his
mules. Sharecropping is a bitch.
Yeah, it was a bitch. Anyways, eventually Ronsell and Jamie both return from the war and they strike up kind of a strange friendship. Like, they relate to each other because they were both in the same war, even though they had completely different positions. And, like,
see each other as equal,
right? Which is, like, another time that Ronsell kind of gets to feel that way. But not in a gay way. I wrote in my notes, not in a gay way, though. That would have been a hell of a movie. But yeah, they both have to deal with, like, PTSD and feeling out of place after having been gone for so long. And then added to the perils of being a veteran, Ronsell has to, you know, go back to being treated like a second class citizen. And he, like, had just put his life on the line for them. So obviously he was, like, not happy about that shit. He was like, are you fucking kidding me? Just let me use the fucking front door of this thing. Like, it's fine. But yeah, Pappy was what they call that racist father that they brought into the family. He, like, causes all kinds of fucking problems for them. And it, like, spirals when he discovers something about Ronsell, like, something that he finds in Jamie's truck. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. You'll also, if you've seen it, will understand, like, why I think this movie, like, barely avoids kind of, like, the white savior trope. Yeah, I will say that this movie, it delivers, like, there's so much POC pain. Like, there's so much of it.
Yeah.
But it does deliver an ending that I think makes it worth watching.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the ending is, like...
That was such a good ending.
It was. It was, like, not quite a plot twist, per se, but it's just, like, some relief in, like, the horrible, horrible things that you have to see.
It was all fucked up.
It was really intense. Surprisingly, I found a comparison to this film with Pariah. Yeah. It's like it has a Deary's vibe. Like, her films, like, they have a vibe, right? It's like...
Something painful is gonna happen, right?
Well, that too, but it's like both of these stories feel really real, right? Like, none of them are, like, super typical. They're a very specific experience, and they just feel so real and raw. And I think that's what Deary brings to the table. It's like, yes, it's, you know, when it comes to film and stuff, you're supposed to suspend reality and, like, go into fantasy, but she makes everything feel really real and, like... That's what you'll get from these movies. They're both on Netflix. Am I right about that?
I don't know if Pariah is still on Netflix.
It was the last time I checked.
It was on Netflix.
Yeah, I saw it really recently. It should be. It should be.
It was on there for a while. So. Okay.
If not, then we'll post links on kodonazichingonas.com as we always do. The other thing that's kind of, like, similar is that the climax or the conflict of the story, it's like a very similar frustration that you get from it. And then the ending, like I've already mentioned, is kind of very reminiscent of life. Like, the show must go on. You got to keep going somehow. Mm. And that's what they do at the end of both of these movies. Like, you keep going after all the bullshit.
Yeah, it's humans making it out and making it out to protect themselves. And they're kind of happy at the end.
Yeah. Well, happy is, like, a tough way to describe it. But yeah, it's, like, as happy as you can be in the situation that you've been put in.
Yeah. Facts.
What did you think of? Do you have any other comments about Mudbound that you kind of
want to add on? I think I know you pretty much covered it. I really fucking like that movie too. I don't know. What would you rate?
It's hard to rate it.
Yeah, it's not like exactly queer, you know. Well, it's not queer.
It's not even that. It's the fact that like it's a good movie. It's well made. The story is real. The direction is amazing.
Had a black cinema. No, had a woman cinematographer.
In all technical terms, it's a great film, but it's like not exactly a film that I can enjoy watching, except for very few specific moments.
At the end, it's not a happy one. That's what. Yeah, it's not a happy movie.
Overall, it's not. It's not even happy. Though you know, of course, you're gonna get a laugh or two in there. You're gonna be rooting sometimes for you know somebody to be cheating on somebody else because they're an asshole. Like, you're gonna be like, you're gonna be super fucking angry sometimes. Like, it'll make you feel a lot. You get a. I guess kind of spoiler, but not really. You get a cameo by some KKK members back then. Like, that actually surprisingly threw me off guard because it was like...
You didn't see them the whole movie.
That, and it's like, yes, I knew that obviously they were there back then, that racism was really bad back then, but it was weird in a place where people are so openly and legally like racist. Mm-hmm. For them to still have a secret group like they do today. The KKK exists today, and yeah, it's secretly. This group that's very underground or whatever. And it's so weird that this group is so underground way back then when almost everybody other than black people are racist as shit. Like, so it was just like, so it brought me back to reality for a minute. I was like, damn, like, I feel like I'm, you know, I was watching this movie about like 60, 80 years ago, and all of a sudden it feels like right now people are still doing this bullshit. People are still in the KKK and thinking such ignorant thoughts.
There's still kind of the same amount of hate. So,
which like makes me rethink my whole stance on like, we don't need to see these movies anymore. We need to like celebrate, which is true, or I still feel it's true, but I'm just kind of like, damn, we're still seeing this shit.
This is still,
maybe we do need to put this shit in people's faces still. Maybe we never can stop. Like, I don't know.
When will white people see us as human? I don't know. That's a great question. And those are a lot of questions to ask when you watch Mudbound or Moonlight or literally anything with people of color in it. Is you have to ask yourself, when are they going to begin to see us as human? What does it take? And, you know, I see white guys in movies be the hero all the goddamn time, and they don't have any pain. They're just Han Soloing the fuck out of their life. And that's cute, but really?
Han Solo. Cheat. I don't want to see Solo.
I haven't seen it, nor will I. I mean, come on, we just want a Lando film. Give us that.
Yeah.
But anyways, the white guys always got to go
and
first.
And openly pan Lando.
Yeah, not just after the fact. So yeah. No, I mean, I liked both of the films. I mean, Praia, of course, I have a deeper connection to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't know what it was like after World War II. We can't really touch on that.
Yeah.
We're not black. We don't know about that experience.
No.
But we know what it's like to be gay as fuck.
Yes, we do. Yes. But I did want to highlight her films because she doesn't get talked about enough, and she doesn't get, and not just because she's a queer black woman, but these movies are actually fucking good. Like, get the fuck out of here. They're way better.
Yeah, it's not like it's like some indie movie that they're making. It's like, way better. Are critically acclaimed. So what would you give Mudbound? I know that you really liked it.
Well, I give Mudbound maybe like a 3.5 bandulces. I did like it a lot, but it wasn't like queer, and there wasn't enough Mary J. Blige. shout out to Mary J. Blige. You deserve that Oscar nomination. But yeah, that's 3.5, just because it wasn't queer enough for me, of course, but I love that a queer woman directed this movie, and I love the cinematography was done by a woman as well. Like, I fuck with this movie.
Right on. Well, all right then.
So yeah, we should definitely talk about this being the end of Pride.
Yeah, and just a few days after this episode gets posted, it'll be the end. Right now we're all like full of, you know, everything is homophobic alert. Like, we're super like hype on it. I don't know.
Stepped in gum. Homophobia.
I don't know how I'm feeling at this point in life, but yeah, happy Pride, guys. Like, I hope that we got some shit accomplished. I hope nothing crazy happened. We have like 20 days to find out how crazy shit will get. Man, what are you?
I definitely want to talk about our probably understanding of Pride, and a lot of people are kind of talking about the police presence at Pride and how that kind of goes against everything Pride stood for. And how Pride wasn't this, like, commercial march. It was about queer and black trans women and brown lesbian, butch lesbians, fighting against being oppressed by the police. Like, the first brick was thrown by Marsha P. Johnson in 1969. And, you know, we talk about Pride and we talk about, you know, our little parade and our rainbow fucking parades, but it was really like a revolt against being oppressed, a revolt against the police state. And I'm very much feeling like that's coming back in a new fucking full swing kind of way.
Hell yeah.
It didn't feel like this when we were growing up. It didn't feel so, like, I mean, yes, there was homophobia, but this is like another whole vibe of like police state oppression. Like, I can't even begin to describe the feeling right now. And it's so fucking divided everywhere. And as first generation Latinos, our understanding of Pride is probably a lot different from the old heads, you know, the old queer women that have really gone through some shit, you know, just to be themselves, which we hadn't really had to do that shit because of them. And I don't know. I don't know if we pay enough respects to the old heads because, you know, we're first generation Latinas and, you know, we kind of understand Pride differently from other people. Like, how do you feel? I feel kind of disconnected from the history of Pride.
I wouldn't say I feel disconnected, but I definitely see your point. Like, we have a different perspective on it. Like, when I grew up in the neighborhood in Dallas. And when I saw Pride, I always saw it as, like, basically, like, privileged gays. You know, people that are like, you know, not that you can be completely privileged when you're gay, but mm-hmm. as privileged as you can get.
Well,
gay,
cis white guys.
Right. Or even, yeah, basically cis white guys, like, enjoying the shit out of themselves.
Yeah.
And recently it's become like brown people not only wanting to enjoy themselves, but to bring up the fact that, like, equality has not been reached, especially for, like, people of color.
Undocumented queer people, right. Trans women of color, mm-hmm. Trans men of color, anyone, you know, trans. And there's this huge thing about police presence there because of how many people are undocumented.
And yeah. So there's a mistrust, and it also sucks because, like, I would want people to feel safe at Pride at the same time. But the thing is, like, only some people can feel safe with police at Pride. Not everybody. So it's definitely freaking tough.
It's a really weird, not a weird, it's a very hard feeling right now between both sides. And the only reason I say disconnected is because, like, you know, growing up, like, an immigrant and, like, not an immigrant, but, like, first generation, like, no one really told me about Pride. All I know is it was a parade, and then I had to learn everything on my own as I got older, and I feel like all queer people have to kind of do that anyways, but kind of, like, learning about the history and seeing what it is now is very fucking different. You know, like, there's corporations behind it and everything. It's very, like, capitalism, and it totally wasn't what it was about. It was just about being able to enjoy yourself in a queer space and have it be safe for you and your people. And now it doesn't feel safe anywhere I go, like, except queer spaces. And even then, I don't like to be around cis white gays.
I mean, people...
I've, like, had bad experiences. I'm just talking from my own personal experience, and I've had bad experiences around cis white men, queer or straight. I've had bad experiences around both. So if I can find my POC space, I do. And I stay there. Because anytime I get out of there, it's a bad vibe for me. I don't know why, but it always has.
I don't know. I still hope that people had a good experience at Pride this year, or enjoying themselves any way that they can. I know it's especially hard when you're in certain states. Like, I'm in California, and as much as cis white men sometimes make me feel uncomfortable, I'm still in a place where cis white men are less problematic than usual.
Yeah.
And I'm very fortunate. You know, I used to sit next to a Trump-supporting gun lover, and now I sit next to probably one of the most liberal white guys in the world every single day.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it just kind of depends. So I'm here rooting for the people that can't just be out there and gay and proud and shit. So yeah. I'm like, I'm here for you guys, and I hope that you guys, you know, celebrate it in your own way.
Yeah. And you also don't have to come out. If that's, like, another thing, like, coming out is all up to you, and don't let anyone force you or make you feel bad because you haven't, because fuck them. Like, wave your flag your the way time. You need to. Yeah,
That's what I meant by that. Like, everybody celebrates in their own way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Watch your favorite YouTuber, listen to this podcast, however yes. you want to do it. Like, You know, you don't have to, and to those who are out, no matter whoever I'm speaking to, you don't have to give money to these corporations that are capitalizing on the rainbow flag. Yeah. You don't have to do that. There are queer POC creators. Shout out to our Patreon. Just saying.
Yeah, just saying.
and of course, there's other organizations that we can really research and give to and celebrate and remember Marsha P. Johnson. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah. I hope it was good. I don't know what's going to happen a month from now, but I hope it was really good.
It was a good month, yeah. But yeah, so happy Pride, everyone. Hope it was good. And make sure to follow us on at CYC Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're at CYC Pod. Someone else took that name. And make sure to subscribe to our Patreon. We have the $1, the $3, and the $10. $10, you get to tell us. We get to cater an episode just to you, right?
That's right. And then the $3 or above, you get extra episodes every single month, sometimes twice a month, depending on how many weeks there is, etc.
And shout out and probably a sticker.
Shout out no matter what. So, and speaking of stickers, leave us a review on iTunes. That helps us a lot. It helps other people find us.
Also makes our day.
It also makes me blush. So, yeah, that would be great on Stitcher as well and on Facebook as well. Those take reviews if you don't have iPhone.
And you can listen to us on Spotify now. What?
Yeah, it's been like 3 months at this point, but yeah, you can listen to us on Spotify.
Hey, just in case this is their first listen.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Thank you guys for listening. Once again, hit us up on our DMs if you have any recommendations for what you want to hear.
What's your personal mic, though?
My personal Twitter is mytepanda.
And mine is @friedpapita. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.